Sandra, and Noah.
Welcome to a very scary episode of the Theater World Podcast. My name is Noah Bender.
And I am Sandra Nemchik.
And we've got a very creepy guest today. Our guest today has been an aficionado of theater, the macabre, and the undead since a very early age. Although he was a scaredy cat as a child, he would watch creepy shows such as Unsolved Mysteries. Now he shares his love for all things creepy and spooky ooky ooky and theater on his TikTok at Mr. Spooky 13, which has recently reached 20,000 followers. Woohoo. Mr. Spooky has also been a recent contestant on Worst Chefs in America, where he showed off his
Worst Cooks in America.
Excuse me, Worst Cooks. Where he showed off his eclectic fashion. Please welcome America's favorite pre-deceased ghost, Mitchell Ralston, a.k.a. Mr. Spooky.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
We're so excited. I mean, you and Sandra have become friends through social media.
Yes.
And I think it's 2 years, right?
It's running 2 years.
Yeah. The thing is, we've connected through a dear kindred friend of ours, all of us.
The late great Carol Channing puppet.
Yeah, the late great. I mean, Carol Channing puppet lives on. Carol Channing lives on through the puppet, but
her spirit entered our dolls.
Yes,
when
yes.
she passed, and
she just creeps in every now and then and goes, yeah, jam.
Can you give us a very spooky raspberries?
Yes, berries.
Yes.
You will have jam only tomorrow.
Never, ever today. Or else you'll face the consequences.
It actually is really scary in the Alice in Wonderland. She turns into a freaking sheep.
Much
She's
better.
She's like, yeah. We're like, what the hell?
Much better.
Oh my gosh.
That special was just like terrifying.
An acid trip.
Like, like the Jabberwocky, which... Like, Alice summons the Jabberwocky by, like, reciting its poem, and then, like, at one point, the Jabberwocky tosses, like, Humpty Dumpty off the wall. Like, it was, yeah, it was too much for me.
Poor Humpty.
Poor Humpty.
Well, I mean, you have a very exciting niche. Like, what got you into the macabre, the supernatural, the spooky ookie ookie of it all?
I'm gonna say, actually, Grandma. She would watch. She had a very skewed idea of what was appropriate for children to be watching. So we'd be watching like Poltergeist 2, and I vividly remember the scene where Craig T. Nelson is like vomiting up like a demon, and he was drinking like tequila, and he swallowed the worm, and then the worm comes out as like a demon. It was wild. But also my grandma would like, she'd tell me like these like really dark stories about like things that happened to her family. Like my aunt, apparently her house was built on an indigenous burial ground, which is a very trite and kind of problem now. But they had the priests like bless her entire house except for the bathroom. I don't know why they didn't bless the bathroom. Maybe the place was busy that day. So, like, my grandma, and also my mom. My mom told me all these stories about like this man that only the like cousins saw, and how he didn't have feet or eyes. He was just like in the shadows of that room and
hanging out in the bathroom.
Just hanging out in the bathroom, you know, flushing twice, making sure everything's okay. But like, I had stories like that, and like stories like, my grandma swore up and down that she was psychic, that she was born with a call, and allegedly
people have the call, they believe it.
Yeah, she not like the C-A-L-L, like a C-A-U-L, call, like you're born with a membrane over your face, and it's
I don't know about
allegedly.
That.
Yeah, allegedly in some cultures that means that you're going to have spiritual gifts, that you're going to be able to like see ghosts.
She has like a fifth eye, not even a fourth.
No, it's like she's like able to, like she would tell stories about how she would like predict things happening and how she would like know exactly when something was going to happen. So I believe that my grandma had gifts, but also she's watching shows like The X-Files and Unsolved Mysteries. So like that very much kind of was my like my foot in the door with paranormal things and being like fascinated with that. And so yeah, I blame my grandma.
I mean, like, yeah, that's amazing. And I love the energy that you put into, you know, all of your ghost stories and histories. I guess what I want to know is how would you convince a skeptic who doesn't believe in ghosts?
Do you ever go walking and you feel the wind blowing in your hair? And although you can't see the wind, you can feel the wind and you know it's there. That to me is kind of like how spirits are. Ghosts and energy like that, although I can't see it, I know it's there. Sometimes they make themselves visible, but a lot of what ghosts are just memories. I say that most places have, you know, most buildings are like giant recording machines. And when enough energy and like emotion is put into a building, it records that energy. And sometimes, you know, it'll be a tragic recording. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it'll be like a tragic recording. Sometimes, like places like the Queen Mary, where like so much history has passed, you just walk in there and you can feel the history. Mm-hmm. So while it might not be what we consider, you know, ooh, scary, I'm a ghost. history and legends and stories, in a way, are their own type of ghost.
So have you ever gone ghost hunting? Speaking of like...
Oh, all the time, besties, all the time.
And you have equipment?
I have EMF readers, I have spirit boxes, I have an obelisk. An obelisk is a machine that has a glossary of words. And when spirits want to communicate, they will pull certain words. A lot of time it's just gobbledygook and stuff, but sometimes it's like completely dead on and says exactly related to where you're at, that it's like, it's scary.
Has there been like an instance where it's like, oh, wow.
Yeah, can you recall like the best reading you've had?
The first week I was at my current job, one of my coworkers was like, bring some of your ghost hunting stuff here. And so we did. And this is like during the day. I was getting things like help, leg, ooh, hurt, fall, call, family, alone. And that scared the heck
that's
out of
ghost
me, my
stuff.
Coworker.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody jump out of your hotel?
Oh, I don't work at the hotel anymore, besties.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, when I did work in the hotel, about two hotels ago, I worked at a hotel that had an unsolved murder in it in the 90s.
Perfect.
There was across the street was a like kind of a hall that they would rent out for weddings and things. So a wedding was going off, and this woman from the wedding went back to the hotel to change out of her shoes. And someone was waiting for her in the room, and he stabbed her to death.
Damn.
And yeah, and she died in the room. It was an unsolved mystery. I wasn't on Unsolved Mysteries, though. I would have just like loved that, though. To this day, they don't know who it was. They think it might have been a mafia hit, someone in the family might have had connections to the mafia.
Like from The Godfather?
Yeah. She, so she is still there, obviously, because her murder is unsolved. I know exactly what room it was, and we were going through renovations. And whenever there's a renovation of, like, a historical building or somewhere where there is spiritual activity, that, like, the ghosts just go wild. They love it. And I was I used to go as like the front desk manager, assistant front desk manager. I would knock on doors and deliver to like the people who are part of the loyalty program, like, you know, some chocolates and like a letter, like welcoming them from staying. I hated doing that because I ran into so many people in their underwear and it was so awkward. So I knew that room was out of order. I knew that no one was in that room, but I looked and the little tiny gap underneath the door where you can see like kind of like light if someone's in the room, I saw not only were the lights on, but I saw a shadow of a, you know, someone's walking by the doorway. I got creeped out so bad. I ran back to the front desk. I checked to make sure. And then I had the security guard come up with me up to the room just to make sure that no one got in there. No one was in there.
Oh, gosh.
The previous times that we had renovations in that room, a woman would come out of the room wrapped in a towel and ask for shampoo. And the housekeeper would knock, 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 bring the shampoo back to the room that the woman was in. No one was in there.
Somebody died in a towel. That's the spookiest thing.
Can you describe the feeling you get when you are successfully spooked? Because I feel like I assume your goal is to be
freaked out
and put on edge in that delightful way.
I when I get scared, it's, you know, the hairs on the back of your arms kind of like they stand up. I literally, when I'm really scared, I get goosebumps. Mm-hmm. And the hair on the back of my neck goes up too. Like I'm a cat. Just call me Jelly Lorem.
The Jelly Cool Cat.
That's amazing. I mean, let's talk about haunted theaters, because I feel like theaters are usually very old buildings with
they have a lot of energy.
They have a lot of emotion goes into theaters. Mm-hmm. And the ghost light. A lot of actors feel that the theater is their home. So one of the popular theories in paranormal investigation is that spirits don't go to where they died so much as they go to where they feel the happiest. That's why like places like Disneyland are so freaking haunted. That's why theaters are haunted, because so many actors like are just drawn to that. And if a theater doesn't have its own ghost, they all kind of blame the ghost of Festus.
What's that?
So it's an old superstition that Festus was allegedly the first actor to leave the chorus, the Greek chorus, and step out and play a character. So he was the first legitimate actor. And the superstition is if he is angered with your production, he will wreak havoc. He'll, you know, make sure that it, you know, has lots of hiccups along the way.
Damn.
There are so many haunted theaters. I'm certain any theater you've performed in, there's like a ghost that's attached to the theater.
Sure. Sandra, do you want to talk about the Hillbarn ghost?
Oh yeah. There's a few Hillbarn ghosts at Hillbarn, the theater that I used to work at. There's one that I call the foot ghost, cause you could see their feet on stage, right? And that at one point made like a few actors black out, like, and then be like, oh wait, I'm supposed to be on stage. So like during Footloose, there was this part where this one actor who's very reliable, he didn't go on stage, and I go off, you know, because I'm watching it, I was assistant directing, I go off and I walk downstairs and I go to the stage right, and I'm like, what happened? He's like, I don't know, I saw them and I was ready to go on stage, I closed my eyes and then I opened my eyes for a second and they're on stage and I'm not on stage. And I was like, what the hell? There's another ghost that lives upstairs that's a costumer, and then another ghost up in the booth that is maybe a stage manager or a ticket taker of some sort.
The theater that I did shows in high school, the first high school I went to, allegedly, because this is one of those, whenever I tell a ghost story, I like to like do a little research on the history of it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You have to say allegedly. So the story goes that it was in like the 1920s, and and an actor had fallen from, like, no, it wasn't an actor. I've heard both that he was an actor and also that he was like a stage hand, like one of the stage crew students. And he fell from the rafters set, like working on lighting fixtures.
That's a perfect recipe for a ghost.
Yeah.
That's what they told us at my theater at high school.
Every high school.
It must be like a same. Yeah.
But so he allegedly haunts that theater, and we had lots of creepy experiences because it's an old auditorium from like the 1920s. So being a bunch of like high school students in an auditorium, of course we're going to make up those stories. Mm-hmm. Broadway is hella haunted. The new Amsterdam Theater is haunted by a Ziegfeld girl named Olive Thomas. She is like, when Disney bought the theater and started reviving it, like I said, when a theater or a building goes through
stuff up.
Renovations, her story is like really sad. She fell in love with Mary Pickford's brother, Jack Pickford, and they got married. And while they, and this is like 1915, around there. No, it was 1920. They went to Paris, and Jack told Olive, this beautiful, you know, oh, boop, boop, ba-doop, like mm-hmm. Ziegfeld girl. He told her that he had contracted syphilis.
Oh.
And that she probably had it herself. So while they're in Paris, she took his medicine, mercury bichloride, which if you take a lot of it, you're going to die. And she ended her life. Now, it's important to note that the bottle that this medicine was kept in was a blue bottle of pills. So years later, they're backstage at doing the Follies. And someone sees Olive and has a whole conversation with her. And she's wearing like a sash and she's holding a blue bottle in her hand.
Oh.
And she doesn't say anything to them. She just kind of turns and walks through the wall backstage.
They were like, what a bitch. And then she walked through a wall and they're like, oh, it's a ghost.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay. So when Disney bought the theater and they were renovating it, they heard noises of like dancing going up and down the stairs. And there were multiple sightings of Olive backstage, on stage, in the theater. So now they have pictures of Olive at the entrance. And when the staff comes in, they say, hi, Olive. Hope you have a good day.
You've got to honor her.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, she's having a great time with all the theater people out there.
Yeah. She was very active, like from the 1920s till about the 1990s, kind of back when, you know, Broadway was kind of dying down itself. And now that Disney bought the theater, renovated it, and, you know, Broadway's coming back, Olive is more active. They hear the sound of tap dancing a lot in the theater when there's no one tap dancing.
Was it good tapping?
It's
or bad tapping?
It's, I imagine she's like that Simpsons character who's like, tap a tap a tap a. another theater that's really haunted is the Belasco. Do you know anything about David Belasco, the kind of founder of that theater?
No.
The one in Los Angeles or New York?
No, in New York City. This is Broadway.
Oh, okay. Because I know the Belasco Theater in Los Angeles is also pretty old and naughty as well. But go on.
So David Belasco was this like 1920s, 1930s kind of theater impresario, and he was a nut. He was like, he would wear priest clothing. He would wear like the collar and everything.
What?
And they called him Rasputin. the Bishop of Broadway. So they built his theater in like 1906, and he produced like a bunch of big operas in there. And after he passed, he would appear in the theater, and people who didn't know about David Belasco, about like how he dressed or how he looked, they would just say the monks in the audience. It's said that to spot him is good luck, he has introduced, it's so weird. This ghost walks up to actors like after shows, like, you did a good job, and shake their hand. And then they're like, who the heck was that man?
Like, does he look like he actually can physically like turn into like almost a living being?
Yeah, that's like when they describe him, they describe it like as this man just walked up and shook their hands. He is a product of his time. So if you are a good-looking lady, he will, as a producer of the 1900s to the 1930s, is apt to do. He will
assault.
He will pinch.
Wow.
What theater is this again? So I don't avoid
that's,
it.
That's the Belasco Theater in on Broadway. There's also a blue lady who haunts the Belasco, and she appears as an icy cold blue mist near the stairways. Stairways are the number one most haunted place in a house.
That makes sense. Because
people just keep going up and down and up and down.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a liminal space.
Transitory,
transitionary. Kind of like an energy portal.
So when David Belasco was alive, he lived, he spent every waking moment in that theater producing plays, directing plays, and he lived there in a small apartment. So I believe this story takes place, like, I want to say in like the early 2000s, but they heard what sounded like a raucous 1920s jazz party going off in the Belasco apartment. And they're like, okay, that shouldn't be happening. So the security guards run up there, they open it up, nothing. It was as dusty as the day they locked it up.
I wish there was a party. I would have gone.
A ghost party? I'd hella go to a ghost party.
Yeah, right? Grim, grim, and ghosts come out to socialize.
Yeah, I mean, woo! You're kind of convincing me. Like, I hadn't heard any of these stories, and I will admit I'm a bit of a skeptic. Because I haven't had, you know, my own personal encounters with these kind of supernatural forces, but now I'm kind of eager to, because I think I like you're giving me the kind of exciting tension of the unknown and the goosebumps of it all. Yeah, I'm the cracks of my skepticism are peeling back. I mean, you kind of remind me of a person straight out of the Haunted Mansion. Like, what is your what is your relationship with the Haunted Mansion?
So in 2009 through 2011, I worked at Disneyland. Mm-hmm. I did not work at the Haunted Mansion. I worked on the Jungle Cruise. So, but the Haunted Mansion is my, like, I always say that there's two Disneyland attractions that are my heart and soul. It's, of course, the Jungle Cruise, but also the Haunted Mansion. That was my favorite ride as a kid. I remember the first trip I went to Disneyland. I was a chicken, so everything scared me. Uh-huh. And I remember going on the Haunted Mansion and my mom covering my eyes. I remember going on Big Thunder Mountain Railroad and my mom covering my eyes and then like kind of squiggling out to see the like dinosaur skeleton at the end. And that scared
me. Wait, so were you like, how old were you when you were like,
I was like four.
Oh, of course. When you went on the Haunted Mansion, they took you when you were four? That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know.
Like, it seems like if there were like a Jungle Cruise skipper function for the Haunted Mansion, that would be you. Like a liaison. Yes. Or just someone to narrate like each section rather than.
The ghost. Yeah, I kind of wish it has that. Yeah.
Yes, of course. But the ghost as a live host.
Live action.
Live action. So are you calling me Jennifer Tilly? That's
the nicest thing I've
ever said about you. I mean, why not?
Why not?
Like, I imagine you infuse the Jungle Cruise with some supernatural elements. Like, I mean, I just imagine
that. Yeah, were there times when you went off book or off script?
Okay. So if it's not OG, it's not okay. And OG's operating guide is in the script. I did. But I was very like, beholden to the 1930s. I taught everyone, like, 1930s slang. I worked there back when they had the attacking native scene, which hasn't aged very well. And I would sing show tunes to them to scare them away. I would sing, like, I sang Anything Goes to them, like full on Ethel Merman. Like, and then they go, then they, the animatronics would go back into the bushes, and I'd be like, everyone's a critic.
Because, yeah, I mean, the Jungle Cruise experience is only as good as your skipper.
Yeah, it's very theatrical.
True.
And you can get an entirely different experience based on who your guide is. And you can tell when someone's really excited to do it versus when they're, of course, you know,
a little sleepy,
trudging through the jokes they've told 15 times that day.
Yeah, the jokes are very they're very easy. They're very easy jokes. Like, even if you say them deadpan and straight up, you're gonna get laughs. And I would tell that to new skippers. I'm like, don't like go overboard trying to make up new jokes. Like, the stuff that's like time tested that we have in the script, it's so easy that you can just deadpan it and you'll get laughs.
What's the audition for that job?
There is no audition.
Really?
They just throw you to the alligators.
Oh yep. My gosh. No wonder you get like kind of like a mixed bag of nuts.
Yep. There is no audition.
Yeah, you just, put you in.
You just sign up like to be a cast member and then you say, I want to be on the Jungle Cruise. Because I feel like, I mean, when no, I've
a
done
lot
it,
of people.
It's been like people, you know, aspiring stand-up comedians and whatnot.
Yeah, I feel that that is a testament to the casting people who work, casting as in the HR people, the people who interview you. It's a testament to them to pick the people who are actually, who seem like they would be good for that. We in my tenure at the Jungle Cruise, we had a cast member who, he was such a nice guy, very, very earnest, but he had the biggest Elmer Fudd kind of accent. Welcome aboard the world famous Jungle Cruise, come all the way in.
Yeah.
And I remember unloading a boat and someone turned to me and was like, whoever was in casting was very mean that day.
They gave it a lot of words.
Enough of the Jungle
the
Cruise
waterfall.
In Disneyland. The waterfall. Yes. World famous waterfalls.
I want to know, what are your like traditions and experiences that you do on Halloween? Because that I imagine that's the most important day of the year for you.
Halloween, I'm sure. Halloween for me is, it begins, I mean, I'm, let's be honest,
September?
I celebrate year round. No, yeah. it begins right after July.
Oh gosh, it's coming up.
Oh God. Yeah. So the moment the first like products hit the shelves, that's when Halloween begins. Last year, Bath and Body Works unveiled their Halloween collection July 18th, and I was there that day.
I've never heard of someone doing a rope drop at Bed Bath.
I feel like there's a lot in LA, though, right? There's a big community of haunted, spooky people.
Oh yeah, no, there's a humongous Halloween community in the LA area. The haunted attractions kind of really sprouted out of Not Scary Farm in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. I always tell people that two things kind of evolved to become what are haunts today, and that's Not Scary Farm and local JC, Junior Chamber of Commerce, the haunted houses that they would put on. And I am very much someone who points out to people that going to a haunted house is, in fact, experiencing theater. It's a different type of theater,
sure.
But it is still theater.
Immersive.
Because like nowadays all of these musicals are like, oh, we're doing an immersive production. I'm like, besties, the first immersive productions were haunted houses.
Yeah, that's interesting. I never thought of it like that in that category.
Yeah.
How has that changed over time? Like where are you celebrating, or what do you do to celebrate, or how do you?
Well, I have gone, I go to as many haunts as I can. Halloween Horror Nights, Not Scary Farm, a lot of Not Scary Farm. Queen Mary's Dark Harbor when they still had it. Last year they did Shacktoberfest, which...
How was that? I wish I could have gone. Shaq is my favorite celebrity.
Oh my God. So there, I didn't realize that Shaq liked Halloween to that extent.
Oh
that
yeah, Shaq
was...
He loves monsters and spooky yuki. Oh, I'm sure he was there.
Apparently Shaq did, yeah.
Oh
you
my
walk
gosh.
You walk through a giant inflatable Shaquille O'Neal to get in.
That sounds perfect.
Was he like Halloween themed? Or was
oh
it
my
like,
God, yes. They had, yeah, it was still Halloween themed.
Shaq as
very
like
much...
an axe murderer?
They had the Shackenstein monster.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My god.
There's like a giant like statue of Shack as Frankenstein.
I mean, if you have money, right?
They had a game where you toss beheaded heads through a basketball hoop. It was fun. It was fun, but I missed the Queen Mary's event that they did, Dark Harbor. I missed that.
Is it coming back this year?
No, it's gonna be Shacktoberfest again.
I gotta go
to Shacktoberfest this time.
You gotta go to Shacktoberfest.
And it's in that little haunted area, right? Right by the Queen Mary in the Long Beach.
Bestie, everything on the Queen Mary is haunted.
Well, no, I meant like the little village.
The little village. Yeah, it's there. It's in like the area right in front of the Queen Mary. It wasn't on the Queen Mary itself because I think when they were planning it, they weren't certain if Long Beach was going to like sink the Queen Mary or not.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was an iffy time. Yeah, I'm glad they didn't either.
Do you have a favorite monster?
What a Sophie's choice. I would say it's a tie. I would say
okay.
The Invisible Man and of course the Phantom of the Opera.
I was going to say the Sasquatch, but I guess he's not really a monster.
No, the Bigfoot isn't really a monster. He's a cryptid, but
okay.
Excuse me.
Yes, Mr. Spooky has been talking about Sasquatch for a lot of times.
And he's not even my favorite cryptid.
Oh.
How many cryptids are there?
Oh, there's a lot because as much as there's so many haunted theaters and haunted buildings, every town practically has their own strange sighting, strange events that they kind of market themselves on. My favorite, of course, is the Fresno Nightcrawlers, because I'm from Fresno, and they're basically walking pants. They're just little pants that walk on their own.
Have you seen them?
I have not seen them, no, but knowing that they're out there somewhere in the world brings me comfort at night when I go to sleep.
Did you watch the show Los Espookies?
Los Espookies? I loved Los Espookies.
Oh, yes, I I'm thinking about the episode where they were hired by a seaside town to fabricate a mythical monster to drive up tourism.
There was also an episode of The X-Files like that, where this like town, this coastal New England town had like allegedly sightings of a Nessie type monster, and they were really hyping it up for tourism. Because I mean, if you market yourself like that, like towns that market cryptid travel, they can get a pretty good niche. They can get some money made.
Because yeah, you're just selling the possibility of seeing something supernatural. Exactly. They don't actually have to deliver. They can just say, "Ooh, you might see it somewhere in the shadows.
You might see it. You might not. Who knows?"
All right. Well, let's move on to our Theater World Lightning Round.
Here's
some rapid fire questions. And let's begin with Mr. Spooky. Who is your favorite Broadway diva?
Carolee Carmello.
Oh, yes.
Interesting.
Oh,
what recent show?
Bad Cinderella, that's the name that they call me. But I'm gonna go a little extra. My favorite diva, theater diva, not a Broadway diva, because she hasn't come to Broadway yet, that I'm aware of, Pia Dawis, who was Miss Danvers in Rebecca Das Musical in Germany.
Okay, what made her so special?
Oh my God, you just need to listen to the song Rebecca from that musical where she sings it. Chef's kiss.
In German, right?
In German. I mean, it's in German. My biggest regret that, like, I say it's the biggest Broadway what if is the 2009 production of Rebecca that was supposed to happen with Carolee Carmello as Mrs. Danvers.
Oh,
if that happened, I would be able to die a happy boy.
We were recently talking to Sammy Knoll. Maybe she'll just bring it to Broadway. We'll just be like, Sammy, maybe. Bring Rebecca to Broadway.
You know, speaking of spooky musicals and Carolee Carmello, you know what other musical she was in that I saw that has kind of a spooky vibe?
Sure.
Lestat.
Oh, yes.
I don't know that one.
Oh, my gosh.
Lestat's mom. Oh, my God. Lestat was wild. I saw it in its pre-Broadway tryout in, like, 2005. And they did, like, a lot of projection mapping. It was, like, 3 hours long. You had to be right with the Lord before you sat down in those seats. Because
that wasn't where they used Total Eclipse of the Heart, was it?
No, that's Dance of the Vampires.
Okay.
Which is the exact reason why I hate Michael Crawford. He knows what he did. So the writers of Rebecca Das Musical, Michael Koons, and I forget who the musician is. I'm so sorry. They wrote a musical. Oh, you know what? It was the guy who wrote all the music for Meatloaf, Jim Steinman. They wrote a musical called Tanz der Vampire, based on a Roman Polanski movie. So, you know, just problematic.
Sure.
But it's just like, it was like this mega, like, gothic musical, like Phantom of the Opera, but with vampires. And when it came to Broadway, Michael Crawford got his big sausage fingers on it. And he was like, oh, let's make this funny for me. Oh, have all the good jokes. Oh, put on your Sunday clothes.
But he's supposed to be like a creepy phantom guy.
He didn't want to be typecast as the phantom. So he's like, put all the jokes for me. So this show has like Rene Auberjonois as like this like Van Helsing type, wacky Van Helsing type character. And most of his jokes were like cut. And then like Michael Crawford comes out in drag in one scene and it's like, oh. And then they gave him like an Italian accent just because
it's funny.
Is there
like a bootleg just like floating around? Like,
oh yes, yes, there is a slime tutorial, wink, wink, online, if you know where to find it.
Of course.
Yes, I think so.
And there's a few of Tanz der Vampire, so you can see the like
perfect
original production and be like, compare and contrast.
Michael Crawford.
All right, we spent too much time on that question. Let's move to the next one.
All right. What is your favorite haunted theater?
My favorite haunted theater. Okay. Ooh. Okay. I'm gonna cheat because you don't really think of this building as being a haunted theater. But it was San Diego's first professional theater, and that's the Whaley House in San Diego. Hmm. Super haunted. Regis Philbin actually had numerous paranormal... Yeah, who wants to be a millionaire? Regis Philbin, God rest his soul.
Is he down there now too, his ghost?
Oh, I wish. I would love
it.
Who
knows?
I'm just walking by and like Regis is like, hey, come over here, man. But like it was the original professional theater in San Diego. The man whose acting troupe performed there allegedly haunts it. He is also a product of his time. So if you are a attractive young woman, he will be as theater producers of the 1800s would be.
For real.
All right. Next question. Yeah.
Okay, so. What do you think is the darkest and spookiest musical?
Oh, darkest and spookiest musical. So I have a lot of favorite spooky musicals.
Because there's a lot. Sweeney Todd, Phantom, Jekyll and Hyde, etc.
Sweeney Todd, Phantom, I went through a Jekyll and Hyde phase in high school.
We all did.
Did you watch the David Hasselhoff DVD as I did? Oh, God.
It was pretty weird.
Is that the one that went viral on TikTok a couple years ago?
Oh, yeah.
I'll live inside you forever.
Yeah.
No!
Yeah.
I went through a Carrie the Musical phase, like, way before, like, I'm talking, like, 2001 before the revival.
Before the rewrite.
And, I prefer 80s Carrie the Musical.
Really?
I prefer in being an aerobics number. I prefer... That's how love starts to unsuspecting. Yeah. I prefer like 80s Carrie the Musical, even though it's a mess. It's
camp.
It's a mess. It's camp. Leroy from Fame is Billy. My favorite musical is actually Little Shop of Horrors.
Okay, that's a good choice.
Yeah. The actual, I've done that show twice. It was Mr. Mushnick once. And the Seymour in that production with me was Michael Willett. Do you remember the show the movie GBF, Gay Best Friend?
No.
Do you remember Dolly Parton's Heartstrings?
Yes.
So the Two Doors Down episode, he's like the gay boyfriend who's getting married, right?
Okay.
So the fact that I was in a Little Shop production with an actor who was in a show with Dolly Parton, that's my 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
That's crazy. You're like, hey. So
it's three. My 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon between myself and Reba McEntire is also three, thanks to Worst Cooks. But I would say my favorite dark musical, I'm going to go with Jekyll and Hyde. I'm actually going to go with Jekyll and Hyde.
All right. Back to that.
Yeah, there's a lot of beautifully dark themes in that. Well, we glossed over it briefly, but let's talk about what the Phantom of the Opera means as a monster figure. The kind of tortured composer, the abusive lover, the possessive spirit. What does he mean to you?
I love the Phantom of the Opera. I would say that's probably one of my favorite musicals. I was so sad when it closed, but it's the Phantom's time had come. I actually really love Love Never Dies. I really love it. I love Xandra's production of Love Never Dies, where like Meg Geary is like destroying a dressing room and a
I sent him like my revival writings. I was like, this is how we can fix it.
Yeah, because she's really the crazy one.
And you don't see it until like the very last second when you're like, who took the child? Who took the child? Wait, like, it's Meg, and you're like, what?
Meg Geary?
Out of all the people, who? It's
kind of creepy the way the Phantom's like, he seems so beautiful.
Yeah.
And then he's like, he's 10 years old.
No!
Like, calm down.
That's calm down. My kid.
That's my child. And then like Christine singing that whole song about like how they did it. And
it's a little much. Like, I was like, this is explicit.
Yeah, I think in that show, maybe one in four songs is awesome. And the rest
all of them are great.
No, they're all bangers.
Okay.
You need to watch
the Australian version.
I've never watched it. I've only listened to it.
When they do Beauty Underneath, and there's like all of these like carnival sideshow acts like in.
Yeah.
They're in diamond shaped cases.
They're like diamond pyramids. Oh God, it's amazing. But like, I love the Phantom. And when I was in high, a lot of my theater stories evolve around high school, but like I was very much like kind of the weird kid. I mean, like who isn't a weird kid in high school? But
yeah,
I was like, you know, the weird gay kid who didn't really fit in with the gay kids, didn't really fit in with these people or that people. So I was very much like on the outside. So I very much felt like kind of kinship with like the monster characters, like the Universal Monsters, mm-hmm. Phantom of the Opera,
the Loners.
Except looking back now, I'm like, maybe finding kinship with the Phantom of the Opera isn't the most healthy of things.
he's not the character I'd want
to. What, you're not going to kidnap someone and bring them to your lair and seduce them and say that you're their father?
You're their father, but you're also their angel, but you're also...
And lover.
And you're also their lover. Like, okay, take a lane, Eric.
Someone with really good daddy issues.
I actually did... a video on TikTok about like when Phantom of the Opera closed, about the true story of the Phantom of the Opera. Like a lot of what Gaston Leroux wrote about were actual events that happened. Mm-hmm. A counterweight of the chandelier did fall, not the entire chandelier, but a counterweight of it fell. It did kill one person. There is a famous opera singer named Christine Nielsen, who was blonde and Swedish, which she never performed at the Paris Opera House, but if you were a fan of opera back in the day, you would catch on at that reference. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like how The Suite Life of Zack and Cody, we all know who London Tipton's supposed to be.
Right. Oh, for right. Sure.
It's not really. Yeah. So
they're like, wink, wink.
Wink, wink. It's very much yes. Like Gaston LaRue's like looking at you going like, wink, wink.
Get it?
There is a lake in the sub-basement of the Paris Opera House.
That's amazing.
And most fascinating, there are numerous urban legends before they even wrote The Phantom of the Opera of a monk who, like a hermit, who lived in the sub-basements of the opera house. During the commune government of France, the opera house was used to store prisoners. Huh. And the legend goes that he was stored, like he was one of the prisoners, and he stayed there after the commune happened. And there's also another urban legend of a piano player. Before they built the opera house, there was another famous Paris theater that they
tore down or something.
It burned down. So there was a piano player who was in love with a ballerina, and she passed away in the fire that burned down the theater, and he tried to save her, and allegedly he was disfigured. So when they were building the opera house, he asked if he could live there in the sub-basements. Again, like these are all kind of urban legends shared like mm-hmm. backstage in the theaters. So we don't know if that, like I couldn't find any actual history to that.
Right.
But it was shared enough that Gaston LaRue, he was an investigative journalist. He was like
he's like
this big like newspaper. Let's get the tea. Let's go out there and get the scoop.
The drama behind the opera house.
Let's get the drama behind that opera house. So yeah, like a lot of the things that go into the story of the Phantom of the Opera are based on actual things. So it's kind of fun to think that like maybe there was a phantom haunting yeah. the Paris Opera House.
I mean, I hope so. Like one can hope.
I hope so too.
Kind of weird something.
I hope so too. I hope so too, and I hope he's hot like Rami. Mm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and his disfigurement was like
it was just like
that's it.
Yeah, like there's acne, something very okay? interesting about like hideous hotness.
Hideous yeah. hotness. Well, like yeah. like Ramin, you know that he's got like abs and like
yeah,
body
he's,
underneath.
He's ripped.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, I can deal with the face.
That's all those counterweights he's been like, you know.
Yeah. Xandra and I send each other like videos of like Ramin Karimloo just like working out.
What can I yeah. say?
He's doing all that rowing.
Yeah.
Another spooky musical that allegedly is based on true, based on a glimmer Little of Shop? Truth. Oh, I wish. Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, that's what I would guess.
Allegedly there was
that must
a
have happened.
Sweeney Todd. I think there were cases of human meat pies. We're talking it like Sweeney Todd, the musical's like set in like the Industrial Revolution, like 1897 around there. We're talking like 1800 period, like 1800 mm-hmm. when it probably actually happened.
Yeah, it's like they didn't have a lot of money. They didn't have a lot of food. I mean, you got to be resourceful, right?
Mrs. Mooney has a pie shop.
Popping pussies into pies.
In the pie. What I wouldn't give to play the beggar woman and just be like foul on stage.
She just gets to go nuts
oh, yeah.
so crazy.
How'd you like to split me, master? What? What did you just
yeah.
say?
What?
What?
That line was changed when I was in high school.
let's do Sweeney Todd with Muppets.
I would love
Todd
that.
And Muppets.
Yeah. And Carol Channing can be in it too. Why not?
She'd be the perfect beggar woman.
Oh, for sure. She'd be like, jam, jam,
for a beautiful woman.
All right, let's move on.
Back to the lightning round.
Yes.
What song, moment, or show always makes you cry?
What song, moment, or show? Okay. Sideshow. At the very end. And this is because I've done a lot of research on Daisy and Violet Hilton. But at the very end, when they're singing I Will Never Leave You, it's such a powerful number. But knowing that, like, all Daisy and Violet had to the very end of their lives was each other just destroys me. Just, oh, my God. Every single man that they got involved with was basically gay. And they were just using
them.
They were using them. And the only people that they could really rely on were each other. So many people in their lives took advantage of them, were using them for either their own clout or literally parading them and showing off, you know, their naked bodies to people who would pay. Like, it's such a tragic show. I love the revival. Oh my God, the 2014 revival was so good. And they went, and the 2014 revival really went into, like, their history. The only thing I didn't like about it is they cut the song where they're like Egyptian princesses.
You know why they did that. But you know, I think the saddest part of their story is the way they passed.
Yes. Oh my God. So their manager dropped them off at a drive-in theater in Florida that they were supposed to open. And never picked them up, never returned their calls. They were literally homeless. They got a job at a grocery store. There's a fascinating documentary. It's on Tubi called Chained by Flesh or Bound by Flesh. And they talk about they were working at a grocery store. One would like do the checkout and one would bag. And it was, I believe, January 1st that they were discovered. They had caught Asiatic flu. One sister had died before the other. And just imagine, like, your last waking moments, knowing that you're next, the one person you relied on so much in your life has already passed. They had half-wrapped Christmas presents. Like, they had bought Christmas presents with, like, their meager earnings for, like, friends that they had made in Florida. They had half-wrapped Christmas presents there, and that's where they were found. Like, that breaks my heart.
Damn,
like,
that's tragic.
Yeah.
It's so tragic.
All right, and the final, most important question. Can you recall the single greatest experience you've ever had at the theater? Ever!
The single greatest experience ever at the theater. I'm going to be really... really kitschy with this.
Sure.
When I first went to Broadway, when I first, like, just being on Broadway, seeing the, like, marquees and all the theaters lit up, and seeing, like, Hairspray, Phantom of the Opera, Beauty and the Beast, like, seeing all the, like, theaters lit up, and then seeing Wicked, and we were fourth row from the stage.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Oh my God. It was one of my, like, there's a reason why Wicked is, like, this monumental.
It's gonna last forever.
It's a big spectacle.
It's gonna be the next Cats, the next Phantom. It's,
yeah,
you know,
for sure.
Less, it's already been on for 20 years, right?
Nearly,
yeah,
20.
I think next year is gonna be the 20th. I think it opened in 2004.
Somewhere around there.
2003.
Yeah. 2003. Okay. Oh.
Yeah, that's a really special musical. I can see why, like, that was the first musical that I saw on tour as a kid, and one of the first soundtracks that really gripped me.
Yeah.
I also remember seeing Mamma Mia in, like, 1999 in San Francisco before it went to the pre-Broadway tryout.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, that was amazing. Mamma Mia.
Cause, like, do you have the program still?
I do.
Right
there. Do you see her?
Oh, next to Carol Channing.
There she is.
That's amazing.
And the
quite the opposite of all the spookiest shows. But go on.
No. Mamma Mia will scare your pants off
that
in the intra octe.
Oh, that too.
No, the, like, time to rise and time to
That's interesting. Yeah, I've never seen it on stage. I've only seen the movie.
The nightmare scene is kind of, it could be spooky, Yuki.
The nightmare scene is spooky.
I stand corrected.
The whole beginning of Act Two is just a nightmare. So the entr'acte is, like, it's like a mega mix of, like, like ABBA songs, but like dark ABBA songs.
Oh, in a minor key.
In minor key, yeah. And there's like, and then they have like snippets of ABBA, just like, you have it all, oh, somebody help me. Like, it's really scary. And then Sophie has a nightmare and it's all like day glow.
So weird.
Which they cut from the movie, so.
Yeah.
Okay, that's why I don't remember.
I wish they kept it though.
Yeah, they cut it from the movie to give Pierce Brosnan more singing, so. Ugh.
That sounds about right.
Pierce Brosnan singing.
I would cut Pierce Brosnan.
In general.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Spooky, for coming on our podcast. This was so much fun to hear about.
Thank you for having the haunted side of theater.
Do you have anything you'd like to promote before we go?
Please follow me on my social medias, my TikTok, Mr. Spooky 13. I guess you can follow my Instagram too. I'm not as active there. Instagram is just where me and Xandra send each other like memes.
Yeah, it is. We just send each other memes.
We send each other memes. I am very active on my Instagram stories though. That's where I'll take like things that I find on TikTok that I think are funny and just post them there.
Right, right.
Or the memes I sent you.
Or the memes that Xandra sends me. And then
that's it.
Well, this has been a fantastically scary and bone tingling episode.
You keep your bones from tingling, young
man. Oh, okay.
This is a family program.
Yes, of course. But yes, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at theaterworld_presents. That's where we post all of our new episodes and clips and whatnot. You're already listening to this, so you're probably already subscribed on whichever podcast platform you're listening to this on. And we will see you soon with a brand new episode of the Theater World Podcast. Bye-bye, everyone.
Stay spooky.
See you on the other side.
Three, bye.